Welcome to podcast number 344 of the Tile East End. We are joined today by an English rose in the shape of Abby, who is she's a bit of a legend on the not just the Reading women's arena, if we call it that, but just football in Berkshire in general. And if you haven't checked out their site and what they do, go and have a look. But we are joined by Abby to talk about all things Reading FC, including a bit of a deepish dive on the women. Abby, how are you this afternoon?
Yeah, I'm good. Although I don't like the fact you've just banded around legend as my introduction. Yeah. That really sticks me up there, I think.
Well, you just need to make sure you don't let anybody down and we'll be all right. We'll be fine.
Right.
We'll be all right.
We're setting the
standard. Of course, we are, as always, joined by an American gentleman in Ross Webber. How are you, sir?
I'm doing good, thanks. We're trying to work out if I'm American or English at this stage, but I'm a Reading fan. That's the important thing.
Exactly. Yeah, we're still on the fence on that one. Before we get started, massive shout out and thanks to our sponsors ZZZ Films, who give us the funds to be able to do what we do. So hopefully you're enjoying that so far this summer. We've got a lot more to come over the next couple of weeks, and obviously leading into the new season as well. Right, let's get straight into the roundup then.
Be loud and be proud and back the boys and make some noise. Come on, you Oz!
Shout out to this week's podcast sponsor, ZZZ Films, showing that age is no barrier to being a hooly hoop.
Okay, so a bit of a weird one this week. So we've had kind of three players officially sign. I think by the time we were recording last week, Ross, we had Sam Smith already through the door. But since then, we've been joined by Lewis Wing and Charlie Savage. Plus the small matter of a game yesterday as well against Southampton. So we're gonna start with Lewis first of all. This one sort of came out of nowhere, didn't it, really, Ross? This kind of, no one was really, you know, certainly on our rumour mill last week, that wasn't really someone that we were talking about. What are your kind of initial thoughts on him coming in?
It seems like the wrong hoop team had them on their radar, right? Like they had all of their nice fancy Photoshops and everything ready to go. And then we sort of swooped in. But yeah, an exciting one. Always good to take a player away from the fake hoops. But I mean, I'm looking forward to seeing Wing play. I think this is going to be something akin to what we saw out of Swift when he was here. Obviously the ceiling with Swift was pretty high when he was playing well. He was playing really well. When he wasn't playing so well, you know, you could see Swift going for stretches of weeks at a time without really influencing things too much. And I remember Tim Deller often saying things like, when Swift plays well, Reading play well. So having a player like that can sometimes lead you to being a little bit one-dimensional going through that kind of person, but let's not worry about that with Wing right now. I think my overriding point here is that this is going to be a player who, if you remember what Swift did, you know, good connector, quite stylish, can do some things that others on the team maybe can't do, and most importantly, a striker of the ball from midfield. I think it's going to be really exciting to see what he can do. And something I'm excited about as well is that this is purchasing a player with the future in mind, as well as just League One this season. Wing hasn't lit up the championship yet by any, you know, by any measure. But he does have close to three full seasons of play there. And he also had, I think, 9 goal involvements with Middlesbrough in the COVID hit season during the championship. So it's a player who's scored goals, who's done good things in the league above as well as this league. So yeah, came out of nowhere a little bit, and a nice coup for us as a League One club to pick him up.
I think the key thing there is that he's got potential, but he's also got a bit of previous as well. As you said, the Middlesbrough, you know, worked right. Pretty hard with and had good outcomes with Wickham as well, just down the road from us.
Yeah,
and I think one of the positive things as well is that, you know, you can't take kind of quizzes and polls on Twitter as gospel, but there's a lot of reviews coming out in terms of him being one of the better midfielders sort of going at the moment in terms of free agents, and you know, managing to get him on a 3-year deal. Yeah. And as you say, kind of feeling from a championship side, he must see something in the project, mustn't he? He wouldn't just go, do you know what, I'm going to... Because we know there's big gaps between Championship and League One, but actually, him choosing us in the league that we're in over QPR in the Championship, that's quite a big deal, right?
Yeah, I think Abby's going to do a bit on Savage here, but something that I saw within his, or at least someone commenting on when he came over, and similar to Wing signing a 3-year deal, Savage has signed a 4-year deal, is that it's great the players are entrusting that stage of their career to us, when, you know, like a few weeks ago, we were talking about winding up petitions, not 4-year deals and things like that. So there's clearly something going on, like you're saying, in a convincing nature to tell these players, hey, you're going to be able to grow and develop here. This isn't the Mark McNulty step of your career. You're not going to sit on the training ground for 4 years and not do a whole lot. You're actually going to progress here. So yeah, really exciting.
Well, I think the consistency there in terms of handing out contracts is, you know, obviously the lads that joined previously, you know, Nibs and Smith have all got 3-year deals. Same with Wing. And obviously we move on to Charlie Savage, who again kind of came out sort of middle of last week. And it kind of snowballed from there, Abby. You know, it's kind of everyone got their hopes up. Everyone started doing a bit of research, looking on YouTube, you know, comparisons a little bit to his dad, who personally I'm a big fan of. Maybe it's the Welsh thing, I don't know, but I've always quite liked Robbie Savage. But you know, we're getting his son in Charlie, 4-year deal from United. I don't know if there was any kind of you know, other competition like there was with Lewis Wing, for example. I'm sure there are other clubs interested. But you know, what's your kind of first impressions of that signing for us?
Yeah, I think, like Ross has said, it's kind of a signal of intention, the fact that it's a 4-year deal. He's only 20 as well. So, plenty of life in him. And obviously, he's coming for United. So, I mean, he can't be that bad, really, can he? I think he made his senior debut back in sort of 2021 for them, having come through the academy. In a Champions League game as well, of all places. So again, can't be that bad if his debut's in a Champions League game. He looks very, I think, sometimes with our midfield in the last couple of seasons, it's kind of looked quite disjointed, and also occasionally the default's been, well, oh, we can't really find a way through, so we'll just knock it back to the defence and see how we go from there. And then sometimes that opens us up to the attack, whereas actually from videos and stuff that I've seen of him, he looks very confident in actually finding that gap, and also looks good under pressure as well, which I think is sometimes something that we really lack. If I could relate him to the women's game, I'd say he's very much a Kira Walsh of Man City in England. She's good under pressure herself as well. There's a few times, even during the Euros, where she was in front of goal, I'm very much under pressure, but looked sharp and actually managed to like sneak her way out and push the game forward. So yeah, I think that seems like something he's going to be good at. And I think if the worst case scenario, and we end up in the tactic of just lump it forward to the big man in Andy Carroll, he looks like he's got a decent left-footed ping on him. So,
I don't know. I mean, I haven't done any research on his goals. I mean, I know he came quite highly rated from Forest Green, you know, last season. Obviously ended up getting relegated like us too. But he has come with kind of rave reviews from them.
Abby's made a great point on Savage being comfortable on the ball, in that comparison to Kira Walsh. From the stats that I can get on Savage, obviously it's a little bit more tricky because he's been playing in development leagues, but something that you see him complete a lot of carries, so he's capable of taking the ball, and even if it's not necessarily going forward, it's not ending up with the other team. So I just think players who can actually hold onto the ball, it's always useful in a game.
And you know, you made that point, Abby, about us being under pressure as well. Like, teams are going to get in our faces. You know, we're kind of putting ourselves above the parapet a little bit with these signings, and without me bigging us up too much, all these players come with reputations, and we're going to be a bit of a target in the league now, because you know, they come with names, they come with history, they come with, you know, big contracts, all this sort of stuff. So if he can cope with that, certainly in the first couple of games, which, you know, we touched upon a little bit last week on the pod, it bodes well, the fact that he can actually take the ball and he can carry it a little bit, because we've had far too many midfielders over the years, even when we've kind of been all right as a team, that just panic in that space. You know, they make the wrong option, they go backwards, they go sideways, and trying to get players to play the ball forward is really key for us, really. So yeah, hopefully that one works out. Talking of forwards, obviously we talked a little bit last week about Sam Smith. He joined pretty much just as we went on the air, and he was one of the only new signers, apart from Nibs, who joined a couple of weeks ago, that featured against a very, very handy Southampton side. It's probably fair to say, Ross. I didn't watch the game. I know that Abby wasn't watching the game either yesterday, but I know that you did, Ross, because you're putting the legwork in this pre-season. Everyone else is bottling it, and you're just going for it. So, quick recap on not only Sam Smith, who is the most handsome forward in the league. I've got no shadow of a doubt about that. Don't let him loosen the purple turtle at night. But also, kind of how we were set up against Russell Martin's Southampton.
The handsome front line with Nibs as well. It's a good, and we'll see. Like, if Andy Carroll's the guy in between, you know, Nibs and Smith in week one, I don't know if that's the case, but then maximum handsomeness will be achieved. So that's always good. So interesting game yesterday. Russell Martin's side's always so frustrating to watch your team play against, because the way in which they hold the ball means that you're going to see a certain side of your team playing against them, because they force your team to play in a certain way. And for us yesterday, that was mostly sitting in a low block. We were sitting in a 4-4-2 off the ball. Nibs came over to the left-hand side from out of a 4-3-3 when they actually started pressing and things like that. They didn't get too many chances to press, unfortunately, at least in the first half of the game. Saints also fielded 60 million worth of players who probably won't start the season with them in Ward-Prowse and Livramento. So I think that was obviously a very good side we were playing yesterday. What I did like, I liked the way in which Reading got the ball forward when they did get it. I liked that they weren't chucking it up in the air. I liked that they were often going low down the wings and having Smith or Nibs on either side chase after it. So Smith, what I liked about him in particular yesterday, very hardworking. If he lost the ball himself, he was hustling back up and down the wing to go and get it. So, yeah, that was exciting. And mostly the way in which they were creating chances was by forcing mistakes from the opposition back line, forcing them to play with the ball at their feet. And obviously with Southampton, like we're saying, this is a Russell Martin side. This is a side that's just come out of the Premier League. A lot of the time, players like Jan Bednarek are able to play the ball out from the back with their feet. But there are going to be players in League One who are not quite so technically proficient. This is going to work against them because we're forcing players who are not maybe who are not the best passers in the world to pass under pressure a lot. And so we're gonna get joy out of that. I thought this was our best performance in the preseason so far. Starting to come together a little bit more. Still room to grow, obviously, but yeah, not a bad performance.
Well, we've got two games coming up this week, which we'll kind of focus on towards the end of the pod. But you know, as you say, it's probably not a bad thing to test ourselves against these kind of caliber of players. And yeah, realistically, Southampton won't be lining up like that in sort of 2-3 weeks' time. So we'll kind of see what happens there, really. Final newbie on the pitch yesterday, Abby, was the kit, which has caused a lot of furore within the fan base. Not unusual for this time of year and the way that the club's been going in recent months. But honest opinions on that, Abby? Like it? Hate it? Not bothered?
I like it. It's a bit different, but interesting. Like, it's a nice nod to Reading. I feel like sometimes, because we're so far out from actual town centre, you kind of forget we're even in Reading sometimes, just in amongst the industrial state. So actually, it's quite a nice nod to a few of the, I'm not sure we can say landmarks, but the landmarks of Reading. So yeah, I'm a fan. I'm also very excited that we're actually going to be able to read the numbers for once as well.
Yeah, that's I think it's quite a new thing this season, really. One thing I read this week, and I don't know if this is true or not, but apparently Reading has more Tesco properties, shall we say, than any other town in the country, right? Okay. So when you're designing it, you think, just put a Tesco on there.
Yeah.
We're right next to the distribution centre as well. Like, just stick it on. Do it for everybody involved. Or Costco or something, I don't know. But I quite like the windmill, or not the windmill, but, you know, the electric, whatever.
I mean, to create an alternative kit.
Yeah.
We'll see what happens. Watch this space with the third kit. That's all I'm saying. But yeah, no, it's split opinion, and it's quite good to kind of get away from all the you know, all the serious stuff going on, isn't it, really? We love a kit. And you two are wearing absolute classic kits as well. Abby's got the white one from 2008, maybe? Seven?
Yeah, sounds about right.
The white one with the literally looks like a Waitrose bag for life, because it says Waitrose on it. Yeah, exactly. Yeah, and Ross has got his Swift 2010 away shirt.
My most favorite memory of this particular shirt is when Charlie Adam scored against Fulham at Craven Cottage right around Christmas 2019. That were a couple of good performances against Fulham in that era, actually.
Yeah. We can tell I'm ill because I've just missed it out by about 9 years. So I've got, if you can hear a nasally whine, it's not my normal voice. I've got a sinus infection. So I thought it's ramped up from last week. It's end of termitis. It's all just kicked off. Right. We're going to move into the kind of the meaty part of the pod, really, because we've got two teams really in crisis. Is that the right word? You know, the men's team are starting to get themselves together. The women's side is not, and you know, I've kind of shared my thoughts over the summer about, you know, what's been going on there. But Abby, if you don't know, is a very, very knowledgeable, outspoken friend / critic of the club, and kind of generally is very, very heavily involved with what the women's team do. And you know, we've dabbled a little bit, you know, since Ross and I started with the pod, but we felt it was kind of high time that we really kind of got into it a little bit more. And, you know, realistically, whether you're paying attention to it or not, you will know the issues that the women's team has faced. Abby, where do we start with this? Because obviously, I think we're the first professional team in history to have both men's and women's teams relegated in the same season. We've got no manager. We've got players leaving. And we're told, and whether or not this is actually as big as it was announced, I don't know, that most of the club are going part-time. Where do you want to start, really? Like, what's the biggest issue currently facing the women's side? And how does that begin to move forward ready for the new season in September?
Bleak, isn't it? There's nothing like really starting your Sunday morning off with reminding yourself just how bleak it really is right now. Where do you start? I don't know if maybe I should start it actually with just kind of doing a little sort of mini journey of like where the women's team have come from and kind of up until this point, really, because I think a lot of people as well, I mean, I definitely get it as someone who is very happy to tweet about and regularly and stuff like that, who, I mean, it's still very much a thing where people say, who cares? Or like, nobody cares about the women's team, and tell the 10 people who are interested about the women's team, stuff like that. And actually, the fan base might not be the biggest, but there is a fan base there. So the kind of, the Reading as we know it now is dates back to 2006. So they were a sort of independent team prior to that, from the 80s as well. And then Reading took it upon themselves to actually fully integrate the team with the like the Reading brand, and so yeah, they've been knocking about since 2006. They were playing back in the Southern Region back then, which is where the likes of Ascot United, Caversham United, Woodley United, lots of local Berkshire women's teams currently ply their trade. But yeah, that's where Reading kind of started, and they just went on a run really, essentially from there, of promotion really. And all the iterations of women's football before it kind of was put into the system that it is now of seven tiers back in 2017 season. Kelly Chambers was very much a part of that as well, and getting those promotions and being granted the license back in 2014 to play in what was back then the Women's Super League 2, which is now the Championship where we are. Eventually promotion in the 2014-15 season, and then 8 years in the WSL, and believe it or not, back sort of in that 15-16-17-18 kind of period, we were finishing sort of fourth, fifth around that time, so behind the likes of Arsenal, Chelsea and City. 18-19 FA Cup semi-final, knocked out by West Ham. And then it's just been a little bit of a sort of steady decline since then, up until the point of being relegated this season, obviously. So, yeah, it's been a real kind of a very, like, a lot of ups and really a lot of ups and then crashing back down again this season. So, yeah, we're at this point now where we've barely got a starting 11. We haven't got a manager and we're part-time. So, like I said, it's bleak.
I mean, you know, if we think back briefly to last season, at what point did you really think, OK, this is it now, we're going to go down? Because obviously it's only one team that goes down from the Premiership, which is slightly unusual in any modern sport in this country, but, you know, professional sport. But it is what it is. In terms of, you know, performances, I mean, I watched them quite a few times over the course of the year, and they did seem to get worse, quite frankly. Was there a point where you thought we're done now? That's it. We're finished.
That's really tricky, you know, because out of the whole kind of general part of the season, I think you kind of, we discussed sort of the end of the season kind of being the part where it really sort of fell to shambles. But actually, I don't think the whole of the last season was great at all. We managed to register 3 wins the whole season, bar a few good Conti Cup games. we didn't win a single away game either as well, which is, again, a bit of pretty bleak statistics. So I think, I mean, we were doing, like I said, we didn't win an away game. It was all home games that we won. And like, so we beat Leicester, but even that was a struggle back in October. It wasn't until Rachel Rowe rescued us in the 90th and the 92nd minute that really happened. I think that was maybe a wake-up call at that point, the fact that we were only sort of 2 months into the season and we were struggling against Leicester, who they were essentially the relegation rivals for us at that point, given they'd struggled the previous season, having only just come up as well. So it looked fairly on course that Leicester were going to be the ones to go down. So I think the blow of Deanne Rose being injured in November definitely kind of was a bit of a hit for the squad, absolutely, because she was the only real kind of goal-scoring outlet for us up until that point. Seeing sort of glimmers of that very much so at the end of pre-season. And then, yeah, it was because we had so many sort of seasons where a big bunch of players had left. It was like this was the first season where actually the majority of the squad were the same squad we'd had before, so it was looking like it might be quite exciting. And actually the 21-22 season was the sort of the foundation setting season, and then this was the season to really have a good go at kind of getting ourselves back up at least mid-table.
Do you think could have done more, Abby, in terms of the recruitment and bringing players in, whether that be at the start of the season or kind of throughout, you know, sort of in January or whatever? Do you feel like they should have been a little bit more proactive in getting more players in?
I think so, probably. We definitely needed to find somebody to replace the MOs, because she definitely, that's always been an issue for Reading, is that there's never been someone who's been an out and out striker kind of person. So like, we brought in Tash Dowie, and she'd had decent numbers at previous clubs. Like, she'd been in double figures when she was at AC Milan, so it was a bit like, well hopefully we'll get that here. But actually it didn't happen for her, and she ended up going on loan to Liverpool, which is another strange story, but there we are. Didn't seem to replace the Tash Dowie or the injured Deanne Rose, to find somebody who actually, if you just get a ball through to her, she's probably going to net. And so I think that had definitely a big impact on the team. Because, yeah, like I say, nobody else. Like, so our current two strikers, well, we've got three, but our current two strikers have 5 goals between them all season. So that's everything you need to know. And like, our number 9, who is actually now next to that, Emily Eichland, she had 1 goal all season. I think she scored 6 in her 3 years at the club. Like, how can you have a number 9 with 6 goals in 3 seasons? So, yeah, definitely recruitment needed to be better in the January window.
I think the other thing about it, Ross, as well, is that there were quite a few kind of negative stories that came out. There was quite a few people kind of saying, look, it's it's a bridge too far for Kelly. You'd been there for, you know, a long time. And, you know, myself personally, I was very, very lucky to be involved in our 150th game and kind of be part of the presentation, which, you know, phenomenal achievement in the modern era of sport. But, you know, there was a lot of issues about, you know, Emma McCandy and the kind of the way that she felt she'd been treated by the club hierarchy in terms of the pregnancy and, you know, everything else that she went through. Do you think that kind of, from a morale point of view, Ross, that affected the team as well?
Honestly, I think I might be punting this back to Abby in just a second, but I was going to ask, because you asked about the recruitment, which I think is important, but, you know, when you've got a manager who's been around for as long as I understand, Kelly was there for almost like 10 years, right, or something similar. So having a manager there that long, you know, it's difficult to keep the dressing room all on the same page. Mm-hmm. So I do wonder, Abby, if there was anything going on tactically or even just from a man management standpoint that wasn't working anymore.
So just on the McCandy point, Emma McCandy point, Ben, I think it was a tricky one. So I think part of it, like Reading are absolutely they need to take their kind of part in the blame for the way the situation was dealt with. But equally, there's not enough of that infrastructure kind of in place from the FA. It's kind of, there's sort of like a one page kind of document that's a bit of guidance on how to deal with like women and pregnancy in football. And then it's kind of like, well, you just figure it out for yourself kind of thing. Rather than kind of, yeah, like leaving the whole blame to Reading. But yeah, it definitely needed to be dealt with differently, and actually I think that's probably more a point of progression for how to deal with women and pregnancy in football, rather than, I think Reading essentially just got the brunt of it, as opposed to them necessarily being in the wrong, but absolutely they needed to deal with that situation better, I think.
Keep up to date with all things Reading FC. Follow The Tilehurst End on Facebook and Twitter.
This podcast is proudly sponsored by ZCZ Films. Remember, if you want to get involved in sponsoring the show, drop us an email to thetilehurstend@gmail.com.
So, you know, on top of poor performances, on top of the, you know, we'll call it the McCandy story, we then end up getting relegated. And then, you know, pretty much straight after that, we had this news of the club effectively going part-time. Now, what that looks like for certain individuals, I guess, is different. There was a lot of players that obviously had their contracts up, a lot of players that have decided that they want to move on anyway, which is natural. You know, if you drop down a league, that's always going to happen with the men's as well. But to kind of compound the issue, we then had the Supporters Trust issue a statement, which in their minds was the right thing to do at that particular time. What did you make of Starr's statement about the women's team and the circumstances and everything else around it?
Yeah, I think it was disappointing to read it. And I think a little bit of it is maybe just not having enough representation within the Supporters Trust for, like, from a women's fan perspective, potentially. So I think that's probably one element of it. It kind of came across a little bit of like, oh, isn't it sad, but we understand why kind of thing. I think what they needed to do was rather use it as an opportunity to question things. So like, where will the team be next season? Like, what will training look like? And will they be in the stadium kind of thing? Rather than, I think there was a random Twitter reply from the Reading account to somebody who'd asked about it on a random thread. And I think maybe like, how is this going to affect the pathway? I think they just went about it in the wrong. I definitely think they should have acknowledged it. Absolutely. But yeah, I think they potentially acknowledged it in the wrong way.
Yeah, I mean, I'd agree with that. I thought it was absolutely disgraceful, to be honest with you. And it, you know, it kind of confirmed what I knew about the Supporters Trust, hence the reason I'm not kind of involved with them anymore and not on the board and kind of left early this year. But I just thought it was a really insensitive thing to say, and the way that it came across was like, yeah, we basically agree with it, and let's just crack on and support the men. And I know full well that there are, you know, individuals, you know, sort of in STAR as a body, but on the board that are very heavily pro the women's team and want to help. So it was a really strange one, and very, very frustrating. And I think I hope it serves as a kind of a wake up call to fans that want to maybe go in a different direction. And maybe, you know, I think you've kind of looked at potentially setting up your own supporters, you know, group for the women, which would be a great thing, because they do need, you know, the women's team do need representation. And for me, I've always felt that it's the same with, you know, the academy, with the under 15s, whatever it is. If you're wearing the badge, you're part of the club. And whether or not you're actively going to games and watch them or whatever, they're still part of your club. And, you know, they need representation, they need support, and they need, you know, focus, really. So, yeah, it left a bit of a sour taste, I have to say, really. In terms of, you know, where we are now, no manager, very little players, nice kit or semi-nice kit. What is the best outcome for not just the next few weeks, but kind of starting the season? Obviously is the bare minimum in terms of getting a manager in, but what kind of profile of players are you looking for us to sign? What is the long-term plan here?
So obviously number one is get a manager. And I really do hope that the process isn't drawn out like it was with the men's team. Because that was painful, wasn't it? So definitely don't need to go through that again with the women's team. It's a funny old one in terms of management in the women's game, because, I mean, if you look at the criteria for who they want, they still want a pro license manager in. So, I mean, there's obviously a certain caliber of person has to be able to do that role. But equally, if you're kind of being honest about it, it's a little bit of a poison chalice for that. So really, who wants to come and join? But actually, a bit of that, you look at it then as a challenge and a bit of a clean slate, which I don't think is necessarily a bad thing, really. And actually, Reading obviously known sometimes for their poor communication, but actually it was really nice to see the open letter from the general manager, Brooke Chaplin. And I think it was really important that she focused so much on thanking the loyalty of the fans and the supporters. But actually it was also a bit of a sort of a call to action as well, I guess. She mentioned how they're sort of, it was a little bit sort of a war speech, I guess. It was something about kind of remaining resolute in the pursuit of excellence or something, I think it was. Thanks. And then, but she also mentioned how, obviously, as gutting as it is to be relegated, that it sort of ignited a fierce motivation, I think was what she said, in kind of rebuilding a newer and a brighter future. So actually, I think there is some positivity in that. So if you can find the right caliber of person for that, I mean, there's lots of new kind of up and coming coaches around. I think there's the way that the women's game is growing right now, actually further down the pyramid and sort of tiers 3 and 4 below the WSL Championship, is there is some incredible quality coaches. So we might just have to will still at this point and just, well, actually, no, we can't, can we? Because we don't have the money to pay for someone who hasn't got a license. So maybe don't do that. That's a bad bit of advice. But,
again, like, you look at it and it's similar to the men. It's the same club, right? It's they're kind of working within the same, you know, ballpark in terms of finances and issues with the owner and everything else. Like, it's still, you know, the issues that the men face are still pretty much the same as the women's team face. You know, they've got to start again from somewhere. I guess the positive is that they've got time in terms of, you know, the season doesn't start till sort of September, does it? So there is a month and a bit to go, which means they can get someone in. But you mentioned there, Brooke, you know, great character to have around, very, very experienced in the game. You've got people like Mitch Paris who, you know very well and works really hard on, you know, promoting the women's team. But actually, you know, that ultimately they need a manager to guide these players and ultimately recruit. So that's going to be really, really interesting to see if they can get that done. And I guess, you know, having the World Cup at this point, you know, means that they might be able to do some business with other players that maybe they, the scouting network hadn't picked up, sort of coming into the limelight or whatever.
So a fun way to pick up signings, right? Always through the World Cup and things like that. I think for me on the women, like I'm just kind of hoping, you know, like 2 to 3 weeks is a long time in football. And a few weeks ago on the men's side, we're talking about winding up petitions, and now we're talking about Lewis Wing. So hopefully, you know, we see, I kind of think that's kind of where I'm at with those. I'm hoping that we see some sort of flurry of activity in the next few weeks.
I mean, talking of the World Cup, Ross, you were out, weren't you, the other night watching your ladies?
I was,
The Venezuela.
This is actually great. Yeah, no, it's Vietnam, and the USA women are very well supported over here. There's a good soccer, obviously, community out here in Portland, Maine.
What did you say? Did you say soccer?
I did say soccer.
How dare you!
It's soccer when it's on this side of the Atlantic and it's football on the other side, you know, like I just do whatever gets me through the day.
Fair enough.
Yeah, no, if you ever get a chance to watch a women's game out in the United States, even if it's just in a bar or something, it's fantastic. The atmosphere is really good. It's really, really nice to be sharing a space, you know, like a beer garden or something like that in it, but in a much more like, you see all kinds of people, like older people, younger people, people who definitely were too young to be in a bar at 10 o'clock on a Friday night. It was just, it's just really, really nice. You know, you don't always think of America as a football country. But for the Women's World Cup, it very much becomes one, which is always very exciting. So yeah, that's been my good women's football experience of the week, I think.
And Abby, 1-0 win against Haiti. I never say that right. For the Lionesses, obviously a bit of a laboured win, shall we say? I guess really the question is, do you change anything for Denmark on Friday, or do you just leave as is?
I think I would bench Russo and bring in Daly.
Okay.
I think given the impact that Alessio Russo had better, and Denmark no fools, they've got some quality in amongst their team, and so I think that would actually be more beneficial to us having a Daly up front, because I think actually with Hemp and Kelly both sort of pinging balls in from left and right, that kind of suits Daly better than I think it suits Russo's a bit more. Daly likes a kind of impact strike and things like that, whereas Russo's a little bit more ball playing, so she's actually, while she's happy to kind of weave in and out of players, sometimes that kind of in-swinging ball from the left or the right doesn't always necessarily suit her. So I think actually that it would be better suited to Rachel Daly. I think, I'm not sure I'd play her straight off the bat, Lauren James, maybe not in starting, but I think she maybe needs to come in a bit earlier, because yeah, she's just like, she's a magician. She's so joyous to watch. Like, she's such a tricky player. She's got sticky feet, I think. Like, even when she's not in control of the ball, she's still somehow got the ball at her feet. So yeah. I think other than that, I'd probably keep it as it is. I think we're struggling in terms of our defence without Leah Williamson and that kind of direction that she brings, and even just being able to play the ball forward actually is what she's good, and she likes a little sort of midfield run as well, whereas we're a little bit more sort of flat when we were playing Haiti. So, but again, I think part of the reason why it was a little bit underwhelming, I think, was because there's a certain element of pressure on us coming in as European champions. And so it's maybe getting those first game nerves out of the way, and probably underestimating Haiti as well. So predominantly most of them are just kind of, they've got a normal day job and then play for Haiti in the international break. So actually we don't know huge amounts of them. There's a few French players in there, but yeah, potentially underestimating them. So, but I think, yeah, that's actually just a testament to how great the competition is right now. I think there was a few sort of games where people thought it would be bloodbaths, the USA-Vietnam game, for example, but actually it's very competitive. France versus Jamaica today as well. That was 0-0. So actually, it's just a testament to where the women's game's going, really.
I completely agree. We watched the Nigeria versus Canada game the other day, which, the quality of football is getting good when you watch an excellent 0-0. When you've watched a 0-0 and you're like, oh, that was interesting. Like, I really enjoyed that. Really enjoyed the way Nigeria played. Canada, obviously, the dominant team in that group. And it's great to see how Huitema's sort of grown as she's, like, continued playing at PSG and things like that. But Nigeria just super fun, actually kind of similar to how Reading played against Southampton yesterday, whereby when they did get the ball, they're just like, right, we're gonna get that to the goal in 10 seconds. So it's really fun to I completely agree, Abby, the quality of the teams on show has been really good so far.
Yeah, we've got a few good games coming up. Obviously England next in action on Friday morning. Well, I was gonna say Friday night, but I'm not in Australia. Friday morning, 9:30. Get down to your local walkabout because there's going to be carnage. Or other themed bar. I'm not saying that it should just be walkabout.
That's where I watched the game. It was great.
Nice.
There you go. See, open an hour earlier this week, didn't it? So fair play to them.
Just for me.
But yeah, there's plenty of games to come. You'd expect that England would get out of the group. Well, I say expect. You never know anything in this era, but you hope. And then we'll kind of go from there. But yeah, all to come, all to play for. Mary Earps in action as well, ex-Reading, fantastic goalkeeper. So, keep your eyes peeled for that one. We're going to head into a fairly condensed mailbag, actually, which is not a bad thing because they've been bulging recently, haven't they, Ross? So we're going to head into that right about now. We're going to start with American Royal. Not you, Ross, but someone else who calls himself an American Royal.
There are a few of us.
They asked about formations. Now, you love a formation, so I'm going to leave that one with you.
I love a formation that starts as something in possession and then changes out of possession. It's just exciting to have a manager like Sellers who is giving me something to sink my teeth into tactically rather than Paul Lintz, right? Anyway, this is the last time I'll mention Paul Lintz on this podcast this season. That might not be true. Yeah, no, it was interesting. I think the question was about how Reading are going to attack in their sort of 4-2-2-2 structure. Something that has been becoming apparent as the preseason's worn on is that if Reading are going to move towards that structure as the season goes on, they're not quite fully in it yet. I think I mentioned earlier, but I think that the way in which they're lining up currently is in a 4-3-3 with the ball, and then Harvey Nibbs will track out to the left in a similar way to how Yaku Mata used to sometimes out to the right, and make two banks of four into a 4-4-2 when they're out of possession. And just reiterating a little bit, I think the way in which they're going to attack is by being reasonably reactionary, which is something that doesn't quite go along with the Red Bull principles that we talked about a few weeks ago, being be reactive, be proactive, not reactive. But the way in which they're being proactive is forcing mistakes out of the back line. They're trying to force mistakes out of other teams in positions where they're vulnerable with players who are maybe not as technically competent as some of their attackers and things like that. So I think that it's going to be, I think that we're going to watch a lot of teams possess the ball more than Reading this season. But when we do get the ball, it's going to be about getting it and moving it to the goal as quickly as possible to really catch other teams out.
Going to be really interesting to see what, you know, not just what Sellers does, but in terms of the club with the defence, you know, moving forward, because that is a massive concern, you know.
A really interesting note yesterday was when we scored our first goal through Harvey Nibbs yesterday with Sam Smith assisting it. There was a great Southampton Twitter account out there, and I don't remember what the name of it right now, which is awful, but they were sharing the highlights from the goals, and their comment on the first Reading goal was just Sellers ball, basically, beneath it. So I was like, okay, so they've seen this before, they know what's going on here, like they've at least identified some sort of style of play, some sort of passage that reminds them of what they were getting, which I think is that, again, attempt to create some chaos in the back line. And Nibbs and Smith look like they're going to be good players for that, so excited to see how it works in League One.
Yeah, I mean, you know, it, no doubt in my mind, we've still got a lot of recruitment to do, but it's moving ever so slowly in the right direction. And, you know, getting three players in a week is good going. They just got another 2 weeks to do exactly the same, really. I think we're still short of about six or seven, in my view anyway, but we'll see how that one pans out. Lyle, basically last week, we're going to circle back to it, but he asked why there had been no statement from the club on what had been going on over the summer. And kind of almost in contrast to what you were saying, Abby, about the statement from Brooke to do with, you know, where she wanted to go with the women's team, what the plans were. We've had nothing along those lines from the men's team. Now, I would argue that bringing those players in, sort of moving towards the new season, the kind of the anger potentially has kind of abated a little bit. You know, the issues still remain, but, you know, football fans generally like new things. They like new players. They like to see a little bit of progress. Do you think that there is still cause for concern at the club in general? And do you think that we will get some sort of wrapping up statement in terms of the HMRC stuff, the potential winding up petition, our order? I've lost track of what we're calling it now. You know, the lack of payment to staff members, and just generally where we're at. Are you expecting something more substantial than the nonsense that we got from Pang a few weeks ago?
I mean, you'd hope so, wouldn't you? Just a little bit of transparency goes a long way for the fan base. It just, I mean, even if what you're saying is not always positive, actually just an acknowledgement of what's going on makes a real difference as a fan. Just so you like can maybe set your expectations or just know where you're at. I think that's what makes it so much worse, is just the not knowing part. And like the fact that lots of fans are having to kind of do the research themselves, and like they're the ones who are checking the EFL website, and they're the ones who are looking at Company House and things like that, and then sort of cobbling things together in a thread on Twitter. That's what's kind of unnerving about it, is the fact that as a fan base, we seem to be doing a better job of putting statements out kind of here, there and everywhere on social media rather than something coming directly from the club itself. And for me, definitely, as a fan of the women's team, that open letter from Brooke Chaplin kind of settled the nerves a little bit for like, well, at least we know that someone at the club is sort of in it for the long run and ready to kind of be honest with us about what's going on. For the men's team, just in general, a statement about the club, because obviously it's not just the men's team, it encompasses them all. So actually knowing the direction of our women's team, the direction of the academy, and just what's kind of going on behind the and all. But yeah, it's a little kind of not what time is where we're going kind of thing.
Yeah, I mean, you know, I know that people are still working behind this. Well, I don't know. I assume that they're still working behind the scenes in terms of the, you know, the campaign that they're running against the owner. I just feel like, you know, and we, myself and Ross have covered this over the last three podcasts, really, but the longer the silence goes on and people haven't got new kits, new signings to kind of take their minds off it, they will feel that silence with something else. And that has kind of been the story of the summer, really. So, you know, we've got a lot more recruitment to do. I assume that with the amount of players we're being linked in now, that at least, you know, a few of those will come off, if not all of them. You know, they're all realistic targets. It's not like we're, you know, we're looking to the Premier League and trying to pull out players that are under contract or whatever. So there's a lot of opportunities there to do it. But it would be good for someone at the club with some sort of authority to come out and go, okay, this is the timeline of events from this summer. This is where we were. This is why we couldn't say anything. And this is where we're going to move forward now. And ultimately, it comes down to that question: has Di learned his lesson? We don't know. And until we miss the next payment on, you know, staff's wages, we won't know. And until we get another run in with the EFL, we won't know. So all we need to do is just keep ourselves clean for the next season, go about our business, try and get some performances going on the pitch, and see what happens. And hopefully, we can start to move into the right direction, really. Speaking of moving in the right direction, we've got another two games this week. So we're going to look at the week ahead now. We've got QP Ha 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 on in midweek, which I believe is a behind closed doors game. I never understand when I do that at preseason. I really, because they're going to stream
it. They just
want to
disrupt my research. That's all they're doing.
It's just shit. I don't understand it. Like, just at least stick it in the stadium so you can get a bit of money out of it. But, you know, whatever. There'll be people out there that pay £5 to watch it. And then we've got the South Wales Mega Swans on Saturday back at the Select Carl Easton Stadium. Two interesting games against Championship sides. Obviously, ironically, Lewis Wing might be making his debut against a team that we basically gazumps, which is quite fun. But, you know, in terms of those games, particularly the QPR game, Ross, what are you going to be looking for when you do your extensive research for our next podcast?
I'd like Reading to win a game soon, you know? Like, yeah. I don't mind them continuing to improve. I don't mind them starting to put out a team that looks a little bit more like an actual League One team, but I'd like to see one of Wing and Savage. We didn't mention Mbenge's back. I'd like to see Mbenge play, just because, I mean, what a haircut as much as anything, and to have a player rolling around called Cheeseburger, that's always exciting. But no, I'd like to see us win a game. Winning is a habit as much as it is something that you earn, and just like knowing what to do when you're 1-0 up with 15 minutes to go, and knowing how to stay calm with a new team that's going to take a little bit of time to gel. Yeah, I think it's time for Reading to win a game, but the fact that they're playing more Championship clubs, I think it gives an idea of what the clubs see themselves as doing in terms of quality level this season. They're hoping they're going to be higher up in League One, so they're playing against other teams that are lower Championship or middle Championship, whatever. They're still treating themselves like the team they were last season, even though they're in a division lower now. So yeah, I'm looking for a win, but in general it's nice to see Reading actually trying to be competitive.
And with the, you know, with the Swansea game, Abby, you'd hope that we would make a few more signings this week, that potentially that would be a game that we'd see, you know, some of the new faces kind of have a bit more of a role in, bed in a little bit more, you know, as we head towards the start of the season against Peterborough on the 5th. In terms of, you know, signings, what would you like to see come through the door for the men's team this week in terms of positions? What are you looking at the moment?
I think, I mean, how stacked are we in the midfield now? I use that word very loosely, stacked.
Yeah, yeah.
Well, that means anymore, do we?
Stacked.
Yeah, I think, like I said earlier when I was talking about Charlie Savage, just my fear is always that we just look like we don't know what we're doing in the midfield, so we're like, we'll just pass it back to the defence and see how that goes. So, I mean, maybe a defender as well. As much as I have so much love for Tom Holmes and Tom McIntyre, they do look a little sketchy at times. So maybe just some older experience from elsewhere would be lovely, because they have really been carrying the team at the back. And again, carrying is a very loose word, sort of kind of balancing on a finger maybe at times. So yeah, maybe a little bit more experience in that sort of central defensive area as well would be quite nice.
I think
I'd love to see Harley Dean come in this week. I think that'd be a great sign. If we can get him through the door, that'd be absolutely superb. And you'd imagine that because Walcott has not gone away yet, both in terms of rumour, but also we're led to believe physically that will be done as well. But, you know, it's interesting times once again in RG2, and hopefully we can keep some momentum, both with good performances this week, but also, you know, topping up the players that we all know we desperately need, and maybe turning those trialists into permanent signings. We'll have to wait and see anyway. Abby, thank you so much for joining us on this now reasonably sunny afternoon in Tilehurst. I don't know where you are, but it's the sun is starting to peak out a little bit. So thank you very much for joining us, and we will have you on again very soon, I'm sure.
I think it's been my pleasure. But yeah, all good. I'm very glad to have been here. Thank you for having me.
I'm Ross. We're off air. We were talking about American names for household medicines here in the UK. Hopefully you can stay well this week.
I know you're off to Walmart this afternoon. Yep, I'm away from the Dayquil. Everything's going to be fine. And looking forward to getting back to the UK soon, ready for that first game of the season.
Exactly. We might even be asked it in person. Who knows? We'll see how it pans out. Have a good week, everybody. Thank you very much for listening. Two games this week, a few more signings, maybe another kit announced. Who knows? But we will be back next week, either way, for another wrap up of what we had just seen over the last 7 days. Thanks for listening. Take care. Come on, you Owls. It's like